Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 116 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, just like every week, and I'm joined by my co-host, the man who is allergic to unicorns, Manny Moraes.
Deathly allergic.
So, like, how does that work? How is that different than being allergic to horses? Because you're not allergic to horses.
No, they're my favorite animal by far.
Yeah, my favorite animal, too. So, you have no allergic reaction to horses whatsoever, but, you know, a unicorn will just drop you dead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I think it has something to do with Voldemort. I'm not sure.
Voldemort. He's to blame for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I can't do it.
Yeah, he's like Beetlejuice, basically. You can't say his name.
Oh, no. Well, if you guys never hear the end of this podcast, or if it's violently interrupted with screams, you know what's going on.
Well, let's get into this podcast. It's not about Voldemort, and it's not about unicorns. It's about Magic the Gathering. Before we get into this awesome training rounds that we have on specific mulligans for different archetypes, let's talk about some other stuff that we have. So, first of all, this podcast is brought to you by Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamessslc.com and get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can also get 5% off of every other order after your first by using the code WouldThatBeGood. So, first of all, 15%, huge deal. If you're buying like a legacy deck, a vintage deck, yeah, they have cards for vintage decks. It might not be on the website, but if you call in and you want to order some Power 9, they definitely have them. So give them a call, and let's just talk about what our fans have to say about Oasis, because it's not just us. We think Oasis is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only place I buy cards, but I mean, you guys get sick of just hearing us talk about it, so let's go into some testimony.
Every time I order from Oasis, it's the perfect experience. I hate ordering online because it doesn't support my LGS, but the most amazing thing is about Oasis, the turnaround time. Shipping is always so much faster than all of the competition. And I can order cards for FNM and still get them within a week. If I order cards online, it's the only sensible option. So I want to make it very clear. If you order a card on Oasis Games, it gets shipped either that day or the next day, every single time.
Yeah, they are insanely fast. They're always on top of it.
So it's just a matter of how fast your mailman gets to you. And in like, as far as Oasis is concerned, it's going out that day or the next day, every time.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, the person who brought this story up, there's a very valid point in what they said. We are, you know, a very small store. There's maybe 4 or 5 employees there. And, you know, it just really helps out with the small business. We all benefit from it. And we're really grateful that people shop there and love us.
Alex counts as like 8 people, though.
Sure, yeah.
So. Don't forget that you, too, can be a supporter of this podcast. Oh, my gosh, that's not a word. Podcast.
I thought you said prodcat.
Whatever I said, it's not a word. You, too, can be a supporter of this podcast by going to our Patreon page. Which is why I said prodcast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And becoming a patron of the show. This week we have some shout-outs for Robert C., who became a patron, and another donation outside of patron. So you don't have to be a patron necessarily to support the cast. The way that this person did it is I sent him a link to the CCMTG Twitch page, which does have a PayPal donation button. So he donated some money to the Patreon page, and that's Grant. He donated to it has a link to the PayPal page, I'm sorry. And so he donated some money, and, you know, he just wanted to wish us, you know, happy holidays, that he wanted to make it special for us. So thank you so much to Grant.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
And thank you so much to Robert, who has become a patron of the show, and we really do appreciate it. It means a lot to us when people can do things like that. So, I mean that, too. I don't just say that, like, something that, I mean, I can't think of something that, like, makes my day brighter than when I get that email notification that tells me that we have a new patron. So, thank you so much. It really does mean the world to us. Except for Manny. It doesn't mean anything to Manny.
That is completely untrue. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So, I want to talk about the patron really quick, because we got an interesting question. Somebody messaged me and asked, when are we getting our tokens? And so the way that the Patreon page works is, for those who don't know and are unfamiliar with the way Patreon works, is there is a set of milestone goals that you have. You know, right now, our next goal is Yule Hangouts. I'm not sure how to handle these because technically we are getting $101 in pledges and our goal is at $100 a month. But with declines and things like that of regular occurrence, as well as you know, the stuff taken out by Patreon.com, we're at about $87.44 per month. So right. it's hard to understand, like, where are your goals met when you get enough pledges, or are they met when you get, when the money you're accruing is that much money? So, but that's a whole other subject. But, so for example, at $100 we have Google Hangouts, at $150 we have an extra episode, basically where Manny and I will record an episode that's a little bit different. It's like a special episode, no filter. Manny gets to be Manny and things like that. Oh my gosh,
you guys have no idea how much I censor myself for this show.
You know, at $200 per month, video content, whether it's streaming with me and Manny, Manny and I recording a weekly video, things like that. And then at $300, we have the CCMTG tokens. Now that, as well as MTGO clan events, or even tournaments for listeners. Something along those lines. Now, this is where things get interesting. The next reward is at $800, where swag happens. This is playmats and sleeves. At $1,500 per month, we have a call-in show as well as hoodies. Yeah. So those two goals are far away. It actually wouldn't be that hard to get to $300 a month.
No, not at all. I mean, I think with...
And the tokens thing, this was... So there was actually a time where tokens was actually in the works. And technically, it's in the works now. I just got in contact with the person who's doing the art. We are going to be commissioning the art. But as far as, like, getting them printed and things, that happens after a certain amount of money. Like, that comes out of our pockets. That's, I mean...
Real quick, who's going to decide what creature types everybody gets?
So,
that
already has been decided.
Oh, what?
So, for example, Quentin, his art is actually already done. Quentin is an elemental. I'm a dragon. Casey's something else. I don't remember what everybody else is. We're going to start with just me and you, though.
Okay.
I want
the most OP token that you know of.
You want a Merit Liege token?
Yep, that's the one.
You want the 2020 Indestructible token?
Yeah, that sounds just like me.
Okay.
Okay, moving on.
Anyway, so the thing is like, yes, we're in works to get these Patreon rewards rolling, but they get released when these goals are met. It's a little bit different than Kickstarter because for Kickstarter, like once the Kickstarter is finished, everything happens, and that's not the same thing with the Patreon page. Now don't let that deter you. If we have the means to do some of these things, I'm not opposed to doing them before the goal is met. Like, I have no problem at $150 if I like have money lying around to get tokens made.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem doing that. That doesn't bug me at all. I'm gonna do it when I have it happen. I got in contact with the artist today. We're going to commission the art with the money that we have now. So it's not like things aren't happening. It's just that to get them printed, it's going to cost something, and I have bills to pay. You know, I have to buy food for Manny every once in a while. There's things that have to be paid for, and that's what the Patreon is for, is to make these things happen for you guys. So I hope that those who are supporting us can be patient with us. I want to make the Patreon special for you now. And Manny and I, you know, during our next podcast meeting, we'll sit down and think of ways to still make the Patreon special for you, even if you're not getting the rewards that you're wanting as you're signing up. Like, $3 does get you a set of tokens. And it will. Once the tokens are released, every person who's ever donated $3, even if they're not donating anymore, they're going to get them. But that's the thing, is that if you stop donating, if you stop that donation, it's going to take longer for that to happen.
Right. I think the thing to probably keep in mind here, guys, is that we are going to take care of you. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, we really are. And it, like I said before, like, if suddenly I have the money lying around to get the tokens, like, I don't care if the goal's not met, I'm going to give them to you. It's just right now, the money's not lying around. You know, there was a lot of money lost in the transferring of co-host, things that happened, and things that were paid for. But that being said, like, I mean, it's not a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money as far as, like, the small business is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully we're recouping it because people love me so much and I'm so beloved by our listeners. They can't get enough, and I love them just as much, so we're putting together a real good relationship. Hey, don't put your hand over your face.
You and Matt Kling. You're both good for nothing. All right, let's move on from this. I just want the wrap up of this to be, and everyone to know that for the Patreon supporters, that I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make this awesome for you. And we really do appreciate it. It means the world to us. Like, there's nothing that means more to me than when I get that email notification. And I send it to Manny every time.
Yeah. And I mean, so this is the last thing I'm going to say about this, because you guys want to hear about magic. We want to talk about magic. Like, every person who donates something, and even if you don't, even if you just listen, you're, like, actually helping us get, like, reach our dreams. And that's, like, an amazing thing. And it means so much to us. Like, it blows my mind. Like, you guys will probably never know how much you mean to me.
Well, Obi wanted to talk on this podcast this week.
Every week.
So, let's talk about hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is basically the point of this podcast. This podcast is about self-improvement, you know, looking inward and seeing what you can do to improve as a person and as a Magic player. So every week, we want to talk about what you can do to improve, but we want to share in that with you. It's not just about what you can do. It's also about us. Like, I have a very big mindset that if you're not moving forward, you're actually moving backwards. There's no standing still.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that.
And so, for me, hashtag always improving is a pretty important segment. So, Manny, how have you improved this week at Magic or life in general?
Well, so far, I have not hit the table a single time, and I intend on doing that for the entire episode.
So, for those who don't know what you're talking about, what are you talking about?
I have a bad habit where when I get really excited when I'm talking about a subject, I'll, like, smack my hand on the table like I'm some kind of a dictator addressing his people. Just boom, boom, boom.
It was actually really funny. So, last week, we actually paused the podcast. I said, Manny, you can't hit the table.
Yeah, you were, I mean, on a scale from 1 to 10, you were like a 9 on unhappy.
Yeah, I was like, Manny, you can't do that. So the next thing that happens is fans of the podcast, they say, they actually come and we got an email and a Facebook post that was like, hey, you gotta stop hitting on the table.
Oh, I didn't know about the email.
It's okay. And the thing is like, it was funny because during editing, I messaged Manny. I said, Manny, like, dude, you gotta stop hitting on the table. And Manny, you haven't hit the table yet. It's been like 10 minutes.
Self-control.
Self-improvement, right? Hashtag always improving.
Right.
No, I think that it's a little thing, but it's funny because, like, remember, I think it was like 2 years ago when we became good friends again.
Yep.
You noted that I always filled my ice tray up.
Yes.
Every single time.
Yeah.
And you were like, but I think you said to me something like, you're very diligent in filling it up.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that was actually my New Year's resolution.
Yeah, you were religious about it.
Yeah, you were very impressed. You were like, that was your New Year's resolution?
Well, it was surprising that, number one, it was your New Year's resolution, and number two, that you stuck by it so fiercely.
Well, that's the thing, is like, if I'm going to make a New Year's resolution, it's going to be something I do, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be this vision of grandeur, right? Your idea of improving can be anything you want.
Sure, yeah.
And you know what? Filling my ice tray up every time I used it increased my quality of life dramatically.
Yeah, I would say so.
It also increased my friend's quality of life dramatically. How often do you have ice when you come to my house?
Every single time that I want it.
It's amazing, right?
I mean, I think that might be a little bit of an overuse of the word amazing, but it's impressive.
I don't know that it's not amazing, right? Like, I don't have an ice maker, and yet you always have ice when you come over. And the thing is, whether it's a very small thing, mm-hmm. but it's amazing that 2 years later, I still refill my ice tray. We did a podcast about shedding bad habits a few weeks ago, right?
Right.
And we talked about how a habit is something that's, like, very hard to break.
Yeah.
And I have created filling my ice tray to be a habit of mine, and I just always do it now.
Yeah, I can't imagine you not doing it at this point.
I mean, you've probably seen me fill my ice tray, like, 100 times.
Uh-huh.
So, the fact is, like, in 3 weeks, or probably longer than that, because you only do the podcast once a week, but in a few months, like, you won't ever have the desire to hit the table.
Right.
And that's a huge improvement. That is the definition of hashtag always improving.
Yeah, our listeners will appreciate it quite a bit, I'm sure.
So for me, I did something I've never done in the history of this podcast this week.
I'm scared. What?
I played Magic with, like, 5-6 listeners.
You've never done that?
No, never.
I've done that already. I've been on the
podcast. It was you who I was like, you know what? Like, if someone wants to play Magic, I'm just going to play Magic.
Yeah.
I've done it drunk, sober, extremely drunk, on my medication to go to sleep. Like, I just, if somebody wants to play Magic and I have time to play Magic, I'm going to play Magic with you. The thing is, like, it was great. Even in the one, like, yesterday I played one match with somebody. And I don't know that we played a meaningful game of Magic. In game one, he had drew like three Wingmate Rocks in a row and like didn't actually like make a meaningful play.
Yeah.
In game two and three, I drew eight lands and seven lands with my green red Autarka red deck.
Sure.
But yeah, he actually messaged me and told me like he learned about rules interactions. I talked to him about like how certain cards work, things like that.
Yeah.
If he would keep or mulligan hands, like what plays I would make with his deck. Showing me his hand, and he actually thanked me. He said he learned a lot, and it's like in three meaningless games of Magic that were like,
well, obviously not meaningless, right?
Well, seemingly meaningless.
Sure.
I felt like I made an impact on people's lives, and that improves me as a person. I feel like so. I always just want to thank the listeners who played Magic with me this week. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that whoever is out there that learned something, I'm glad you could learn something. I've learned a lot in Magic. I don't by any means think I'm a great Magic player. When I think of great Magic players, I think of Paulo Vitor and John Finkel and Kai Boudet, and I'm nowhere close to that, but I've learned a lot, and I think I'm a pretty good Magic player. So I appreciate those who have come to me for the things that I have gained in knowledge and that I've shared this with you, because it actually makes me a better Magic player to have to explain rule interactions to you.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I think it's... You know, anytime you're teaching something that you know fairly well, it only strengthens what you know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's hashtag always improving for me this week. Don't forget that if you're a patron of the show, you can submit something to the Patreon page. And you too can all be always improving. This week we have a message from one of our patrons named Eduardo. He says, I'm a huge fan and a Patreon supporter. In fact, I won card of the week this week. Yes, you did. We're sending it to you today.
Cards
of the week, really. I messaged you on the Patreon site. The reason I messaged you is to ask for your advice. I think I'm a decent Magic player. I think I am a decent Magic player when I focused. My biggest problem is maintaining focus throughout the whole match. I notice I start off strong and then get worse as the game prolongs. For example, I knew an opponent had a Planar Outburst for like 12 turns, yet I died to an Awakened Planar Outburst that I could have easily played around. I simply forget to consider that. Any advice on keeping our focus during a long match? Keep up the great work. So, the initial thing that I messaged him is the exact same thing that you said when I brought this question up to you, is to take notes during a match.
Yeah, absolutely. Just whenever, you know, you're keeping track of your life total, you almost always want to do it on a pad. I mean, you can use a die, but the thing about a life using a pad is that you can go back and track and, you know, see combat damage, fetches, even make notes of it if you want.
It's actually funny that you bring that up. I think I told you about 1,000 times to stop using dice to keep track of your life total.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you fought with me tooth and nail over it for, I think, like months.
I don't recall this, but I believe you.
Yeah, I would get so mad at Manny. In fact, he would actually, like... I think you and Justin Sloan both bought those big dice.
I bought mine because Justin Sloan had his.
And like you guys would keep track of these life totals on these humongous 20-sided dice.
Yeah.
And every time you would get them out, I would tell you like, Manny, get a life total, get a life pad out. Like, you need to get a life pad out. You need to get a, and like, no, I'm better when I have these big huge dice in front of me. And like, I actually am so strongly against using dice to keep track of your life total. The person who actually did our logo. He actually has an app. It's called 2020 Life Total.
Uh-huh.
He actually has an app where I believe you can take notes and keep track of life totals on your phone. If you have your phone in airplane mode, a lot of judges will let you do that. But yeah, I'm majorly against things like dice and keeping track of things on notes. Even on Modo, I'm a huge fan of like taking notes in the chat and then not sending those messages.
I wouldn't say I'm against it. I just think... keeping your life total keeping track of your life total on a pad is just more beneficial.
And if there's ever a life total discrepancy, the fact that you have every life total change written down goes in your favor.
Right. You know, just like, oh, why, you know, I have you at this life. Oh, why? Okay, well, fetch, combat damage, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, huge deal.
Right.
And then, so, that's the first thing that both Benny and I thought of. We both thought of taking notes, keeping things track on whether it's in Moto Chat or on a life pad. But Eduardo wanted something more specific. So Manny, you talked about one thing that you did to keep focus was actually playing different decks.
Yeah, absolutely. So very, very early on, when I started playing Magic, I would just get so tired and I would lose focus and I'd make sloppy plays. And I think part of that was because, you know, I wasn't used to playing Magic for 8 or 9 straight hours. You know, an eight round tournament gets exhausting. You're using your brain, you know, you're concentrating very hard, you're focusing, you're doing the very best you can. And just, so going back, so we'll get to the different decks thing, but part of getting past that, getting so tired and losing focus on matches, was just getting into the groove where I was used to playing that much Magic. So I think it's like anything else, where if you're a basketball player, if you play basketball for several hours a day, or you practice basketball for several hours a day, you know, a 1 hour game, or however long they are, I don't watch basketball, but however long a game is, you know, is nothing to you.
I actually play basketball, used to play basketball a ton.
Right.
And you and I actually played a game of one-on-one, like, 3 months ago?
Yeah, 3 or 4, somewhere around there.
And both of us were exhausted.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Exhausted. We were the most tired we had ever, like, and, like, we were playing to, like, 11, and we both got, yeah. I think it was, like, 4-3 in my favor, and we were almost done.
Yeah, it was an ugly sight.
No, and that's the thing, is, back in the day when I played basketball 3 hours every day, like, playing a basketball game was no big deal.
Right.
If I, like, and I've played in pickup games since getting fatter, uh-huh. And it is hard. And you know what? Your brain is a muscle just like your body. And so it can be mentally exhausting to definitely. Play in that kind of thing. And I'm just going to read what I wrote down as we were talking about this subject.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
So when Manny was explaining the advice he wanted to give, the thing that I wrote down was play different decks. Find a way to play more games of Magic that are grindy. You know, play more Abzan, more Control. It will flex the muscles of your brain that you need to use when you're in those long games of Magic where you need to stay focused.
Yeah, especially when it's so easy to lose focus.
Yeah, where you need to interact with those people. Mm-hmm. So if you find yourself playing decks that aren't grindy, maybe practice with those grindy decks. Because if you don't stay focused, you know, a few weeks ago I talked about how it might have been last week, I don't remember, but I talked about how sometimes I'll lose focus and let a spell resolve when I have a counter spell in my hand.
Right.
And so doing things like this will help you improve that aspect of your Magic game.
Yeah, one thing that I like to do is a friend of the show, Austin Giltz, he loves playing Control and he loves playing...
You forgot to use quotations when you said friend.
Did I? What? Oh, no. I love Austin. But anyway, so he loves...
Friend of the show.
Yeah. So he loves playing the grindiest, most horrible Magic you can possibly imagine. He loves it. The longer a match goes, he's in ecstasy. So what I like to do is on Cockatrice, I'll pick a Control deck and we'll jam games. And it helps me so much in staying focused and playing those long matches and, you know, making sure that I'm playing the best Magic I can throughout the whole match. Because if I start to lose focus and I start to, you know, drop my level of play, he'll get me. He'll get me good.
Yeah. Here's what I wrote down. And here's what I wrote down when I was trying to think of, like, how I would approach this. Because Eduardo, he wants something general. It's like, how can I improve my focus in life? Because that's what it really is. It's about life here. So what I put down is, do puzzles outside of Magic. Do things that occupy your mind and train it. Find a friend with a similar skill level and play something like chess. You don't want to play chess with somebody who's significantly better than you. That is not fun. And it won't exercise those muscles. But if you find a friend that has... chess is a great example of, like... If you find somebody on a similar skill level, you're going to exercise those muscles and get better together a lot. Maybe play a chess match, like...
Okay, so... I get what you're saying. But isn't one of the messages that we you know, we talk to listeners about... Or we send to listeners, you know, that we preach, is finding someone who's much better than you at something you want to be great at.
So chess is not the same.
Well, I mean, thing I disagree. I think it's the same as anything else, right?
No, chess.
So if someone completely trounces you and they make you look like a child, right? Then you ask them how they did that.
How much do you think you would improve at chess by playing with? We'll use Bobby Fischer.
Sure, sure. I mean. Okay, I mean...
You wouldn't improve at all.
I mean, that can't be
chess
true.
Chess is not the same thing as Magic.
It's not. I mean, sure, yeah.
The reason I use chess specifically is because of how much... I mean, how much skill level is important in that game.
Right. And
just, like, there's no variance in chess.
No, zero. And, I mean, you're factoring your moves, you know, several turns ahead. It's pretty wild.
I would assume that if I played chess with Alexander Haigh, who... claims to be a great chess player, I would probably get crushed. I mean, as children, you and I learned how to play chess together. You and I.
Yeah, we know how the pieces move.
Yeah, so... and the thing is I actually think that the last time we played chess was at Oasis Games. You knocked over your king out of frustration.
No, I beat you. I'm very sure that I beat you.
I'm 100% sure that you were done and knocked over your king.
I haven't lost a game of chess since I was like 10.
That's what you said when we played, and then you knocked over your king and wanted to go walk away because you were mad.
I don't believe so. I'm very sure that... Well, you know what? We can play again. That's fine, but I'm very sure that I won.
Anyway, my point is... Oh, getting rowdy on the podcast. Anyway.
It's going to come to blows.
My point is like, with this, is doing exercises outside of Magic that will help your concentration. If you have a lapse in concentration in something like chess, like, you're probably going to lose if you're playing against somebody who had a similar skill level.
Right.
And so you're very rewarded for exercising those muscles and keeping that concentration going. This can happen outside of all kinds of applications outside of Magic, right? Anytime that you can do anything to exercise those kind of muscles, it's going to be very helpful for you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, exactly like you said earlier, your brain is exactly like a muscle. The more you flex it, the more it can do.
Yeah. So that's my recommendation for you. And this is something that's not just a Magic issue. If you get good at this, it will improve your day-to-day life. As a child who did struggle with focus, Magic, for example, has helped me. It's righted the ship. I'm very much improved at focus in my life because of Magic the Gathering.
I mean, the last time I saw you, when we were children, you could not sit in your chair more than 10 minutes.
I was also misdiagnosed with ADHD and on, methamphetamines as a child, so that wasn't helpful.
Sure, yeah.
So I was on drugs that made me not be able to sit in my chair. But since going off of those drugs and, improving at those things in my life, it's been really helpful. Like, Magic has really improved my capacity to learn as a person. My stance on improving as a person. Magic has changed a lot of that for me. And there are things that you can do outside of Magic to help those things. We talked about how the brain is a muscle. How much Hearthstone do you think I play?
How much?
I actually played 3 matches of Hearthstone today. And I do those to flex those muscles in a short amount of time. Where they're similar muscles to my Magic muscles, but I want to expand. I want to get better. I want to find different ways of thinking. And those are the kind of things that you need to do, Eduardo, to improve at Magic. And to improve at this skill. Because it's a skill. It's not how do I do this at Magic? This is a skill in life. And the things that we teach on this podcast, in the end, they're all really life skills that we are applying to Magic. Like, when we look at it, surrounding yourself with greatness, that's a life skill. How successful are the people that surround themselves with great people? They're way more successful. How successful are the people that shed their bad habits? They're way more successful. How about people who are better at micromanaging themselves? They're way more successful. There are things that we teach on this podcast that we teach because, first of all, they're going to make you a better Magic player, but in the end, they're also just going to make you a better, more successful person.
We should write like a self-help book. I like it.
It's actually not even me that said this. We actually had a player who came up to me at SCG Las Vegas and said, I love your podcast. You are the TED Talks of Magic podcasts.
This may be surprising. I've never seen TED Talks.
Regardless, I think that the question that Eduardo has, I think that you will find that if you execute in this area and you get better at it, you'll find that you're better at it in life. So I encourage you to do the things that we're talking about. And if you have any additional questions, let us know, because I need to improve at focus. Manny needs to improve at focus. Everybody does. Like, if you're more focused, you're a better person. Yeah,
I've never heard anybody say, I just focused too much that time.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, let's move on from the Patreon interaction this week, and let's go to Card of the Week.
My favorite segment.
Well, this week, we're giving out a pretty sweet card. We're going to give out a Gideon Ally of Zendikar. So before we announce who we give it to, why are we picking Gideon?
Because it's amazing. It's an incredible card. If you and your opponent are in top deck mode and you draw that card, it feels very, very good.
So let's talk about the decks that have seen Gideon in them.
Everyone that plays white.
Green white.
Yes.
Megamorph.
Yep. Obzon.
Esper Control from Patrick Chapin even had that card.
Yep.
Esper Tokens. We have Jeskai tokens. Like you said,
it's insanely versatile. It's insanely powerful. It's an all-around great card.
What makes it good?
I mean, the fact that the second it sees play, it begins advancing your board state. Like, you're advancing your game plan. A 2-2 every turn is so significant. And, I mean, if your opponent doesn't have any ways to deal with it, you can smash your, you know, you can smash them for 5. It's great. I mean, not to mention that you can make an emblem that makes all of your tokens 2-2s, right? If they were 1-1s before.
Sure. Well, let's talk about who's going to win this card of the week. To be eligible for this, you have to be a patron of the show, $3 or more. That's not to say that's not something that can't change. So we actually got asked, you know, what is the level of this? And this level can change. For example, if we get to, like, any reasonable amount of money where the podcast is very self-sufficient, it's paying for our time, it's paying for things like that, it's paying for things like this, then every patron will be eligible for it. Right now, it's $3 or more. But this is the one time you can hit on the table, Manny. Who is winning the card of the week?
Vanessa wins.
Vanessa, you have won the card of the week. Please shoot us a message, whether it's on Patreon or... you know, you can message me on Facebook, message Manny on Facebook. We just want you to claim your reward. We'll hook you up. We'll get it sent to you. And we appreciate it. We appreciate you as a supporter of the show, being a patron. It means the world to us.
We hope you enjoy the card. We hope you get to play it and crush some opponents with it.
Yeah, Manny has even played this card in Modern.
I have, yeah. It's decent.
So.
Okay, and real quick. When you said you get to hit the table, you actually hit the table, and I want to hit it, so I'm going to hit it real fast.
Do you want a drum roll?
Oh, just one. No, I just want to give it one good smack.
Go for it. All right. I hope that didn't hurt anyone's ears.
Satisfying. Satisfying.
Okay. Well, let's go to Power Rankings this week. So, this week on Power Rankings, we don't have any. So, the last couple of weeks, there have been a lot of split formats, and as listeners of the show that have been listening for a while know, I'm not doing Power Rankings during split format weeks anymore. It's not interesting. It's not helpful. Nobody learns anything. We have to adjust the Power Rankings for the split formats. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. You just wouldn't be getting the
data. It's not valuable data.
Right. Exactly. It's not something you want to base, like, you know, what you're going to play this week off of.
Like, for example, we have an SCG Invitational and the SCG Players Championship. Those are warped metagames.
Right.
Yeah. These are not actual metagames. Like,
no.
Like, well, you're not going to see a metagame where literally, like, 70% of the people are playing Abzan Aggro right now. That's not a thing that's happening.
No.
And that's what happened. So, it's just not valuable data, and we're not going to present it to you because it's not helpful to you. So, no Power Rankings this week. But we did get some feedback that people want Power Rankings articles every week.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think that's a great idea, and we're going to start doing that for you guys.
Did you just volunteer?
No.
Did you voluntold me that I was going to do it?
Yes.
I appreciate that.
You know, all the typing and the, you know, anything to do with computers and keyboards. That's you, man. You got it.
You bring some sass to the podcast.
That's right. I bring myself and I bring a good attitude.
So we'll, during our next podcast meeting, Manny and I will talk about incorporating things like that into the website. It probably won't happen until after Christmas, which is this week, so...
Right, yeah, we're very close to that.
So, sometime during the new year, we'll talk about things that we can do to incorporate things like that. But, no Power Rankings this week, but we are not without topics to talk about. Deal or no deal?
Deal or no deal?
So, real talk. So, weeks ago, we talked about the new Diamond Mana symbol and whether it was a deal or no deal. You said... deal.
Right.
I said no deal because I'm like, I don't know what this does. Yeah, it could be no deal whatsoever. It could be that this mana symbol just means colorless mana, and then that's a big deal because...
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
That would be a big deal to me. But what if it's not that? What if it's, like, something else? What if it's something completely different? It turns out that what I said was correct, and that makes it a big deal to me. What about you? Is the new mana symbol a big deal to you, and how does it... affect constructed magic?
So it is a big deal. I mean, in essence, they've now turned colorless into like a sixth color. I mean, your generic mana and colorless mana are different now and not always interchangeable.
So for those who don't know, generic mana means those ones, twos, threes, fours, sevens, eights, nines, tens on your, like, Emrakul is 15 generic mana.
Right.
And then there's this new thing that's colorless mana. That's this diamond symbol. And that's a different mana. That means that you have to specifically be tapping a land that taps for colorless mana. So that means that things that are ratted backwards. So things like Pain Lands, they do tap for a colorless mana. Things like Filter Lands, they tap for a colorless mana. Things like Ancient Tomb, they tap for two colorless mana. So those things that used to create generic mana are now creating colorless mana. Because that's what they always did. They always created this colorless mana.
Right. There was just never... It just never needed to be specific in something's casting
class. Right. But so into a generic mana, you can tap, like, a mountain, which creates a red mana, and put it into that generic mana. But you actually couldn't tap a mountain to create the mana for something that required colorless.
Right.
So it's a little bit different, and I think it's a big deal. And I think that it's something that, mechanically, Wizards can reproduce. And right. also, not even Wizards' idea.
What? Where did it come from?
The Great Designer Search, John Laux, former co-host of Limited Resources, I must say Limited Time Only, created this exact mechanic almost.
When? What was the...
So the Great Designer Search was a contest that Wizards held to find the next designer for Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And John Laux entered, and this is one of the things that he created during his time in the Great Designer Search. And they've now incorporated it.
Did he get the job?
He did actually not get the job, but he did work at Wizards later.
Okay.
Since quit and created a game called, like, Luton Legends. So check that out.
It seems like the idea then very much made an impact on them.
Well, and the thing is like, we have to remember that, like, so right now it's 2015, mm-hmm. and... Wizards is creating things for 2020 right now.
Oh, really? I thought they did it 2 years ahead.
2019? I think it's 4 years ahead. Their special 4-year projects. So they always have a 5-year plan in place. So that means they're always 5 years ahead. In some capacity. Not in creating cards, but like having a 5-year idea of what they're doing. Kind of like we have a 2-month idea of what this podcast is about, right?
Right, yeah, I know.
We always have 2 months ahead of time. We know what this podcast is about.
I mean, yeah, the point you're trying to get across is just that the cards we're playing with now were actually developed in 2011.
Yeah, they're really old. to people like Mark Rosewater, can you imagine him trying to keep track of what's going on in the world?
I'm sure he's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a hard decision. Hard thing to keep track of. And, I mean, most of the people at Wizards, they don't even remember their cards by their real names. They remember them by their designer names.
Right.
Like, Red Guy That Deals 2. Like, that's a card name that they would have played with.
Yeah.
I think that this is a big deal. And I think that it's a big deal because of how easy it is to revisit. Right now, Wastes, which are the colorless basic land, they're only in Battle for Zendikar. So if they don't reprint Waste in Oath of Gatewatch, Oath of Gatewatch. So if they don't reprint them in Shadows Over Innistrad, then they're actually not legal once Oath of the Gatewatch rotates. Because just like a basic land, so Plains is printed in every set, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it legal in every set.
Right.
So let's say that... 3 years down the line, or 2 years down the line, however long it takes. Sure. I can't remember off the top of my head what the new rotating schedule is.
Big block, little block.
Sure, but it's 6 months between everything, 18 months between a rotation.
Right.
Which is different than 2 years between a rotation.
Yeah.
So it's different.
A little bit, yeah.
But basically, Waste can rotate out, which means that we don't have to worry about it again, right?
Right.
So it's actually a mechanic that can be revisited, just like...
Well, I think the way Wizards is setting it up, it seems to be like much more than a mechanic, right?
I mean, it is a mechanic, right? Because, I mean, it's a beautiful mechanic because it's so simple and so elegant. And that's why I think it's a big deal, is because any time the Eldrazi come back, they can just bring this back.
I mean, they don't even need the Eldrazi, really.
Not technically, but...
See, that
the point of the Eldrazi is that they're devoid of color, right?
Right, no, I understand, but I mean, there's so many facets of the game where anyone could fit this in.
It's a very Voros episode.
Hmm?
Very, is it Voros? Is that the word?
I don't know.
Where it's, you care about the storyline?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, it's something that I feel like you could, in essence, if you felt it necessary, you could fill it into, you know, a lot of different.
So we're both on this is a big deal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually, I mean, I'm going to wait until, you know, I get to play some cards with it and, you know, see what kind of decks emerge from this.
Does this change things like Ancient Tomb for you, where, like, it creates this mana, but it's two colorless mana specifically?
No.
Does it make the, I mean, to me, it makes these cards better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that it does. Yeah, I was just thinking the exact same thing about the Painlands, right?
So yeah, instead, they become Trilands.
Yeah, they're untapped Trilands. It's incredible. Like, it made these cards much, much better. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they work with decks now. Because, I mean, like, cards like Hangerback Walker, right, where they're typically cast for two generic mana. Now, something in the future, it could be cast for only two colorless, right? Or something similar to it where now that card is not nearly as good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a big deal. I think that we'll see it in the future. It's just interesting to note that this is the only set that currently has this, and we need to move forward knowing that. But also, if I was a financial speculator, if I opened a foil waste in my booster pack that was full art, I'd be snapping that thing off fast.
Pack one, pick one.
I think it's worth a lot, yeah. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. All right, well, let's move on from deal or no deal, and let's talk about our training grounds this week, and that's Archetype Mulligans. Man, we've talked about Mulligans on this podcast, I think, twice in 100 episodes, and we're back at it again.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed them last week, and we didn't really get
to... We played Sneak Keeper Ditch last week.
Right, yeah. I mean, the game involves mulligans, right? So now we're going into it a lot more in depth, kind of our ideas and our theories behind what you should do, how you should do it, and when you should do it.
It's actually funny. People really liked Sneak Keeper Ditch last week.
I mean, it was good. It was fun. I mean...
Even funnier is that previous co-host of the podcast hated playing Sneak Keeper Ditch on the show.
Why?
They didn't like it. They thought it was stupid.
Huh.
I won't name names, but, like, previous co-hosts actually hated it. They said it didn't add to the show. The fans loved it. We're going to play Sneak Keeper Ditch with, like, four different decks this week.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Are you so excited? So I love playing Sneak Keeper Ditch. I play it on the way to tournaments all the time. I love it. I do it all the time. I love hearing people's thoughts on hands. You know, I'm a very aggressive person when it comes to mulliganing, and others are not. And I love hearing their opinions and their thoughts.
You know, I'm not aggressive when it comes to mulliganing, and I should be. I definitely should be more aggressive.
Well, let's talk about some notes that I have before we get into Archetype. So, this will be broad. You need to know each deck that you play and its specific mulligan situations, because it's not the same with every deck. Every deck is composed differently, but have some basic and broad things that can help you. It's not the same for everybody, but there are things that are the same, or similar at least, right? Combo decks are even more different. Combo decks, like, I feel like combo decks, your mulligan decisions are even more important in a combo deck than any other type of archetype. Like, think of how different it is to mulligan with elves than Belcher, or elves than Oops All Spells, or Splinter Twin than Storm. Like, your mulligan decisions are vastly different. And that's not the same, like, when you play an aggro deck, is your mulligan decision with mono red that different than your mulligan decision with a Tricor red? No, probably not.
No. I would say not. I mean,
is your mulligan decision with Jund midrange that different than your mulligan decision with Abzan midrange?
No.
Not really.
No, you're looking
for the... Is your mulligan decision with Esper control that different than Grixis control? No, like, you're looking for similar things.
Right, so whereas, there's key identifiers in each of these archetypes that you're going to look for, and then, you know, if, you know, your hand doesn't pass, you know, the mental test that you give it, then you got to get rid of it.
Oh, mental, wow. That was a really... Mental test. We need to write that down. That is exactly what a mulligan is.
Trademark.
And he's like, I thought of that.
You heard it here first. You heard it from me.
So... Let's talk about... Well, let's look. One more thing. So, we both have different mulligan preferences. As we just talked about, I'm more aggressive. I'm really aggressive. Like, I will mulligan a lot of hands. I believe that my average six is going to be better, and that's way more important than any other decision I make. Like, I'm making very important decisions before the game even starts. So I'm very aggressive when it comes to Mulligan. I don't know the last one-lander I kept. Like, it's even harder convince me to keep a one-lander with mono-red. Like, it's actually hard.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that's still very dependent on what you're playing. I mean, playing green-red aggro and modern, with a Burning Tree Emissary in hand, one land in hand, being on the draw, that's something I might consider keeping, depending on how many one-drops I may have.
All right, so obviously there are very... So we're going to talk about aggro, mid-range, control, and combo. Those are the things that we're going to talk about. And I'm going to switch this up. We're actually going to talk about combo first. So what is your ideal lands to spells for an opener with a combo deck?
So it depends. If we're talking about Splinter Twin, you definitely want to have enough
land. Two to three lands.
Yes, yeah. So you want to have... Right, so you want to have enough lands to play. So like Grixis Twin, you're very much playing a control game until you can combo off. So you're wanting to keep, you're wanting to keep control of the board state. You're wanting to make sure that nothing kills you and that you are comboing when you want to and when it is the correct time.
How can your lands and spell variation change in order for you to keep it still? So, for example, in Splinter Twin, I'd want, like, two to three lands every time.
Right.
But if I had, like, Cataxian Probe, Serum Visions, Deceiver Exarch, Splinter Twin, one land, and then something else. Like, that is a one-lander that I would keep.
That would be, for me, a snap keep.
It would be a snap, right?
Yeah.
I would never keep a one-lander to, I would snap keep this hand. It's a very significant difference, and the thing to think about is, like, what percentage do you have to draw land when you have Gataxian Probe, Serum Visions?
Yeah, I mean,
it's huge!
Yeah, in addition to, your draw step, let's say you're on the draw, right? Let's say you're on the draw to make this
If you're on more. The draw, it's you would be insane to mulligan that hand.
Right. So with seeing that many cards, your percentage of seeing a land is so very good that it's crazy not to.
So if you know you're playing against aggro, do you still keep that hand?
If you're playing against aggro, chances are they have not a whole lot of interaction, maybe, a few bolts, but you're probably fine. I mean, a lot of times, you're beating aggro by comboing out.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you beat aggro, is coming out quickly. And I agree. I think that with that hand, like, I would keep that hand against anything. But there are hands that I wouldn't keep that are one-landers that are similar to that, where I would probably keep it against mid-range. I would probably keep it against troll. But it's hard to make those decisions without knowing what you're playing against. So, for example, like, if you're playing against control, like, it's way more likely that I'm keeping a low land hand against control with a combo deck than against an aggro deck, right? Because I have more time to get to the land drop. And if I draw interaction spells, or I have an interaction spell, let's pretend that last spell in my hand is like a Spell Piercer or a Mizzium Skin.
Right.
Like, that hand gets very good against control. The same thing can be true against midrange. Because I, as a combo deck, I'm the aggro deck against midrange decks, I'm more likely to keep these sketchy hands that pay off after a certain number of draw steps. You have to decide according to your deck what those number of draw steps are, but it can be very specific. So this week, we're going to play Sneak Peek Predict with my actual own personal Legacy deck that I have sleeved up.
And then, Spencer, if you would, not everybody plays a ton of Legacy, not everybody loves Legacy, would you explain to us how it works real quick?
So I'm going to be drawing a hand with the deck called Oops All Spells. So a lot of the decks that you'll see nowadays, they play Underworld, Cypress, Cerebus, and it's a little bit different than the deck that I play. I am going to be drawing a hand from the Angel of Glory's Rise deck, which Angel of Glory's Rise is a card that when it enters the battlefield, it's an angel, and when it enters the battlefield, it returns all humans to play. And this deck plays Azami, the Lady of Scrolls, which is it doesn't really matter like the mana cost in this deck, but it basically is a legendary human wizard that you can tap an untapped wizard you control to draw a card. And it also plays a human wizard by the name of Laboratory Maniac that when you draw a card and you have no cards in your deck, you win the game. And this deck wins the game by playing a card called Dread Return and Narcomoeba, which Narcomoeba is, if it would go into your graveyard from your deck, you put it into play instead. And it's a 1/1 flyer. So, the way that this deck wins is it has no lands in it whatsoever. Literally no lands.
Yep, it's zero.
Oops, all spells. Like, oops, all berries. If you are a kid of the 90s and ate that cereal before. For some reason, they like to name combo decks after cereal. I'm not sure why. but it plays Undercity Informer, which is a card from Gatecrash. Balustrade Spy, which is a card from Gatecrash. Both of them are, they basically mill you until you have... until you hit a land.
Yeah, you mill yourself.
Until you hit a land, and there's no lands in the deck, so you mill your entire deck. So, we're going to draw a hand really quick. I have the literal paper cards in my hand. And we will talk about the hand. So, this is a very interesting hand. And Manny, I'll tell you why. So we have Chrome Mox, Gataxian Probe, Lotus Petal, Simeon Spirit Guide, Elvish Spirit Guide, and then the Azami, the one of Azami. So, this hand for me is a ditch. I would not keep this hand because I don't have a way to get Azami into my graveyard.
Right.
So, if I had, let's say, a mill card where I can mill my deck instead of maybe this Chromox, I can actually mill my entire deck on turn one, Cabal Therapy myself to ditch the Azami.
Right.
And then in that turn, you know, actually I changed my mind. I would actually keep this hand.
You would? I don't think it's keepable. Because, I mean, let's... So really all you can do here is Chromox, Probe. I mean, it doesn't seem very promising.
So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 mana.
I agree, but I mean, you're not winning this on turn one.
Yeah, absolutely you can win this on turn one. So we're on the draw.
Right.
So we draw Cabal Therapy. So we're insanely good at Magic. Gataxian Probe, we go to 18. We draw Lotus Petal. So we have 8 cards. We're actually going to start casting on Lotus Petals. We're just going to start putting them into play. In the next 2 turns, let's say that we have, we just need to draw something that mills our deck. We have a lot of cards that mill our deck. I think this hand is a keep, but it's a sketchy one. It's hard. I don't think it's sneep, but the thing is all you have to do is draw one of your cards that mills your entire deck. And you have 8 of those, and you have a lot of cards that draw you cards like Street Wraith and, Street Wraith, you have Metamorphose, Gataxian Probe, things like that. It's a hard keep because if you don't get there, and that's the risk of playing a deck like this.
I personally, it would be a ditch for me. I don't.
So you
I
think
don't...
that you need one of the mill cards to keep?
Absolutely. I mean, so yes, your hand is all mana and gas. I don't like relying so heavily off of your draws, especially with this deck, and especially in a format like Legacy where, you know, an opposing combo deck can literally combo off when you pass the turn and you're dead.
There are a lot of people who think that keeping all mana hands in any format is wrong. So you could be absolutely right in that case. So the next one hand we have is Balustrade Spy. So this is one of the mill cards. It costs 4 mana. You mill your deck until you hit a spell.
Right.
We have Wild Cantor. This is a hybrid green-red 1/1. You can sacrifice to add a mana of any color to your mana pool. Lotus Petal, Simeon Spirit Guide, Narc Amoeba, Chrome Mox, Metamorphose. This hand is a snap keep.
Yeah, absolutely. This hand looks wonderful.
So, for those who are wondering what you would do with this hand, let's say you're on the play. So, turn one, you're going to go Chrome Mox. And I think what you want to do is exile the Narc Amoeba.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything.
Under that. And then you're going to play a Lotus Petal. And you're going to sack the Lotus Petal and tap the Chrome Mox. And you're going to play Metamorphose, floating black, other color. You're going to draw a card. Luckily, you're really good at Magic. And you drew a Cabal Ritual. Next thing you're going to do, you're going to cast Cabal Ritual. So you go to 3 mana in your pool. You're going to exile your Simeon Spirit Guide, go into 4 mana in your pool, play your Balustrade Spy.
And you win.
And you win the game.
That's how it's done.
Yeah. So, very good hand. It has a turn one win. You have the highest turn one win percentage in Legacy with a deck like this. So, we have a hand that both of us would snap keep, and that we're kind of split on. Let's do one more. You ready?
I had a good feeling about it.
You had a good feeling about the turn one win hand?
Yep. I saw it and I was like, I don't know. It seems good to me.
Yeah. No, that Manny has actually never played this deck.
No. I mean, you explained the combo to me a little bit before the show, and it clicked.
By the way, we're not, like, editing these hands. We're actually just drawing these hands.
Oh, yeah. Right off the top.
Playing Sneaky Verditch with them. So we have Balustrade Spine. That's one of our Millers. Undercity Informer. It's our other Miller in the deck. We have Street Wraith, Pact of Negation, Elvish Spear Guide, Chrome Mox, and Tinderwall.
That is money. That's great.
So how would you play this hand?
I would get rid of the pact.
Oh.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, no. We have one of the... Sorry, we have the extra mill guys. We don't need those. We have so many. Okay. Let's get rid of the more expensive guy. Okay. All right. So I'd Chrome Mox that, right?
So you Chrome Mox the Balustrade Spine.
Right.
So you have the same plan that I would have.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to Chrome Mox the Balustrade Spine. So we have a black available to us. We would then probably cycle the Street Leaf before any of this, putting ourselves to 18.
Yep.
Yeah, and we're bad at magic and we draw an Archimede.
Oh, that doesn't seem good.
But we're still going to do the same thing. We're going to Chrome Mox the Balustrade Spine, exile the Spirit Guide.
Cast the Tinderwall.
Cast the Tinderwall. Sacrifice the Tinderwall. Tap that. Play the Informer. Pass the turn.
Yep.
Next turn, we untap. Draw a card, activate Chrome Mox and the Understudy Informer to mill our entire deck.
And win.
And then, you know, if they have it, they have it. If they don't, we win.
Yep. I mean, and you have a pact for backup. That's very strong.
Yeah. So only if the Balustrade Spy, or only if the Understudy Informer resolves.
Right.
Right? And it's important to note that we exile the Balustrade Spy instead of the Understudy Informer because in doing that, we create a chance for us to activate the Balustrade Spy. So that we only need 3 mana technically to go off rather than 4 where we would have to cast the Balustrade Spy.
Seems much, much better.
So, with a deck like this, what are your worries? So obviously, with this deck, you're specifically only worried against playing Force of Will.
Right.
Everything else just doesn't matter to you.
No, I mean, if you're on the draw, they can, you know, they can Force and Daze, usually. So I would worry about, you know, Force of Will and Daze, and then just aggressive mulliganing. I mean, if you don't have what you need to win, then you have to get rid of it.
And you're very favored because you get that new scry, the Vancouver mulligan. Is that what they call it?
Is that what they call it?
They do. I was at that Pro Tour. I just called it the scry rule.
Yeah. I mean, that seems good.
Well, let's load up. Let's do control next. So this time we're going to talk about a control that hits kind of close to home for everybody. And we're going to do... we're going to do Esper Dragons. We're going to play some Sneaky Ditch with Esper Dragons. So.
My favorite.
You love Esper Dragons?
No. I think I would like to play this deck for probably, I would say the rest of this month, but that leaves me like a few days. So, I'd like to get familiar, a little more familiar with it, I think.
Sure. All right, Manny. Keep or Ditch. We have Silumgar Scorn, Dragonlord's Prerogative. That's the 6 mana draw 4. If you have a dragon, it's uncounterable.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate Price, Silumgar Scorn. So we have 2 Silumgar Scorn. We have Polluted Delta and Prairie Stream. This hand's intense.
It is. And I mean, it's.
And then we have one more card, and that's why. In my opinion, this is a Sneep, and we have Dragon Lord Ojedai.
This you can play, you know, a number of ways, but I think this is definitely a keep. So with the Prairie Stream, you know, obviously you're laying that down first. But I mean, with laying down the Polluted Delta on your second turn, if it's necessary, you know, you can fetch for the black if you have to. I think that's not the best. I think Silumgar, you want to have the double blue for Silumgar Scorn, which leaves you off of black. But I mean, currently with this hand, you only have one ultimate price. So, it seems very good. It seems like you have a lot of ways to play. And I mean, Silumgar Scorn on turn 2 is phenomenal, as everybody knows.
Let's talk about controller really fast. We're going to ask the same questions we asked for the combo decks. What is your ideal land to spell ratio with control?
I would probably say almost 1-for-1.
So 3-4. Three lands, 4 spells.
Yes.
In fact, I would say that there are very few hands that I would keep with 2 lands in control because I'm so aggressive. This is one of them. But man, like, if I see a 2 lander that doesn't have some card draw very early, like something like a Jace or an Anticipate or a ponder or preordain.
It's very important to your game plan. If you, you know, it happens all the time. You get stuck on the able to win.
So obviously we keep this. So how did this hand change our opinion? Where we will?
Yeah, having two counter spells is. I mean, it would seem busted, right?
Right. I mean, there's nothing that I don't love more than
on the play. It's okay. It's not nearly as good, but still keepable.
So how does playing against midrange change your decision? Do you change your game plan? So for me, I want to grind out the game against midrange because I'm favored in, with control.
That's where you
want
to be.
Yeah. So I actually want more lands. There was actually a game where Casey and I talked about it a long time ago on the podcast where we were playing blue-eye control in the blue-eye control mirror, and we had 7 lands in our opener. And I looked at him and I said, I think this is a snap keep.
I would probably like one or two spells.
No, so it was blue eye, like, Sanctus Revelation.
Return control. To Ravnica, yeah,
yeah, I remember. And we were like, this is a snap keep.
I mean, typically the player who had access to more lands was favored.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like, that in with midrange, you want to have some interactive spells. In the control, actually, like, if I know I'm playing against blue eye control and I have 4 Sphinx's Revelation in my deck, like, I know I'm going to hit all of my land.
Yeah, drops. There's definitely no. You're not going
to. That's the thing, is that it was so specific to that format, that matchup specifically, that that's why it's important to know that these things are so broad. Aggro. Man, you get pretty punished against aggro if you're on the draw with that hand that we just talked about, right?
Yes, things could spiral out of control, right? Because, I mean, turn 2, they might be playing, you know, 2 cards. And then what do you do? It's not so hot anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk, I mean, that's a great point. Before we move on, they could play 2 cards in a turn.
That's a thing. Someone, you know, some people do that.
Some people do that sometimes. So it's a pretty big deal. Swamp, Flooded Strand, Shambling Vent, Keeper Ditch, In the Blind.
In the Blind, it's a keep. I wouldn't say it's a sneep, but it is a very beautiful hand. It would be the greatest, probably the best hand you can have in this with this deck.
I think this hand is harder to Duress and a Silumgar Scorn.
Right.
And we that want to play very, that Duress pretty soon.
I mean, turn 1. I would actually play the Swamp and get at it.
And I think that is the same mistake that most of our listeners would make.
Okay, why is it a mistake?
So the thing is that Duress gains equity over the game.
Sure, yeah, that is true.
And that's... the thing is for me, I would play that Flooded Strand, I would grab a blue-white land, and then I would play that Flooded Strand, and I would grab a island.
Right, yeah. You know, I think you're right. I think that was a mistake, because, I mean, that Silumgar's Scorn turn 2
I think it's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah.
Is the value of that Silumgar's Scorn becoming a daze is... You gain so much equity that way.
Right.
And you want to Duress them. You want to get their valuable spell, their early play out of their hand. But the thing is your Duresses in this deck are made to interact with your opponent's cheap spells, things like that. Or their Haymakers.
Right.
They're not going to play a Haymaker before you can play that Silumgar Scorn.
Right.
So it's important that you make that Silumgar Scorn active before you make your next play. It's very easy for you not to have to cast that Silumgar Scorn than to play that Swamp, cast that Duress, and leave up Silumgar Scorn.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
In the same turn.
Made a mistake, you guys.
No, this is why you're on the cast, right? Is that you're closer to that level that the listeners are on. Uh-huh. And having that insight makes it so that this interaction is important.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it seems, yep. Yep.
Did you learn something just now?
I did.
It feel good?
It does. You know, because, I mean, that's a mistake I could have been making and continue to make for some time. So
now that you've learned, why don't you explain your thought process in looking at this hand now?
Like, now,
does this hand look to you now that you have...
It's probably a little bit better than I thought it was before then, if anything.
So it depends on what you're playing against, right? In some matchups, it's way worse. And in some matchups, it's way better.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can now Duress a little bit later when, you know, green-red wants to play Atarka's Command seems very good. It seems, because, I mean, no one's going to Atarka's Command typically with 1 or 2 creatures on the board. They really want to gain the most value they can out of it. And, I mean, the Silumgar Scorn and the Foul Tongue give you quite a bit of time to do that. And, I mean, the Shambling Vent is going to buy you some time as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of things going on with this hand. I think it's a keep. In the blind, it's a hard keep. It's something that you need to think about before you, you know, make those kind of decisions. But I do think it's a keep, and it's something to certainly look out for. Let's do one more with this deck, and I think this hand is very interesting. The winds, Silumgar Scorn and Dragonlord Ojutai. Sneepkeeper Ditch, Manny.
I mean, I think it's a keep. I definitely think it's a keep. So, I mean, typically you want to go, you would like to go basic, basic battle. But I think in this instance, you know, if you play Sunken Hollow turn one, then turn two, you have your Flooded Strand in play, you grab an island. That puts you on Silumgar Scorn as counterspell with Scatter to the Winds next turn, and then you can curve pretty nicely into Ojutai early if you need to.
You actually can't do that.
Why?
So
Sunken Hollow, then Flooded Strand for an island, then you're on double blue, then with a Flooded Strand, I would probably grab a Plains, and then the Sunken Hollow is free on turn four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't think of grabbing the Plains, actually. I would actually dish this hand.
Would you?
Yeah. Oh, so man. There are too many draw. I would dish this every time.
Sure. Yeah, I could see why
there, that. This is one of those hands that tie four lands. Man, that hand's really good if you're on the play, right?
Right. Like, it's
you just need to draw a couple actions third. You know, you have two counter spells for their big plays or the game, so you can, you know, what are they going to play that I can even interact with your Ojutai?
Right.
So on the play, this hand seems great. Mm-hmm. On the draw, though, like,
it could
definitely, like you said, what if somebody plays two spells in a turn against you?
Right. And I mean, if you're playing against something like Abzan Aggro, that's almost surely going to happen, right?
So this hand is very draw or play dependent for me. But very interesting, I think. And that's the thing, is that you have to remember where you're at. With something specifically like control, draw or play is very important.
Yeah, it definitely is going to factor into all your decisions. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing else to really say about that.
All right, let's talk about some aggro decks next. And we're going to do Atarka Red. Also, please note that Atarka Red, Esper Dragons, and the midrange deck that we use, we will put the deck in the deck list in the show notes so that you can look at the deck lists if you're listening along on your computer, and then we'll hold Austin Geltz responsible for reminding me to put them in the show notes. Not Manny's responsibility, not mine. Just blame Austin Geltz if they're not in the show notes. But next up, we're gonna do some oh, you know what, it's actually not Attacker Red, it's actually Green Red Aggro in Modern.
Oh, I saw the show notes, and I thought you just called it an audible. I thought that's just what we were doing now.
No. We're going to do the green-red aggro deck.
Sweet. I've been playing this deck nonstop, so.
So, when it comes to aggro, what are your spell-to-land ratio that you're hoping for? Is this closer to combo where you're more willing to keep a one-lander?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, depending on your hand, I almost never ever want to see more than two lands with this deck.
So, but aggro in general, I think that's probably true of aggro in general. I think you're a little bit sadder to see three lands in aggro and combo. I think that both of them are that way than any other deck.
Well, and to go a little bit bigger in standard, but typically I think that's a good rule.
So you're pretty big on two lands, five spells. Yes. In aggro decks.
Oh, yes.
And then you want to draw your... That's the dream.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's a little bit different than combo. You might never want to draw another land after. Does your land to spell ratio ever change against any deck?
Your game plan is very one-dimensional. You are wanting, you know, to kill them by turn four or five. You're wanting it to be over fast. You're wanting to have little interaction. And you're not doing a whole lot other than winning the game.
Every rule has an exception, Manny.
And yes. Yeah,
that exception, I think, is the aggro mirror, where I actually want to draw more lands than my opponent, draw arc lightnings and boiling earths and pyroclasms and whatever I can have in my board to favor me in the aggro mirror. I want to be the control deck post board.
I would agree. I think you definitely do want to be the control deck post board. But game one, you were wanting to get there faster. You're both on the same game plan. I mean, if you're on the play, you're very favored to get you. But I think that is true.
Manny, we have Experiment 1, Flinthoof Boar, Lightning Bolt, Atarka.
Without a thought, this is awful. This is so bad.
But you have Lightning Bolt for your first two turns.
Plenty of time
to get. Or a control deck even.
Yeah, or even a control deck. You're giving them so much time to get ready for you.
So if, I actually have an interesting thought. If these Experiment 1s were Wild Nacatls, I would actually have a hard time deciding on this hand.
I
think I would ditch it in the end, but if I, like, all I need to draw is any green source in my deck, and all of a sudden my deck is actually great because I can bolt my control opponent, draw a green source, play a Wild Link Huddle, bolt them again. Like, it would actually be a great hand, but with this hand, I just think that it's too... There's not a good matchup for you.
No.
When you can't play your one drop, that's a 1/1 unless you do more things.
Yeah, I don't think that's... You really want to be looking at that hand almost ever.
Yeah, I think it's an easy ditch. So let's go look at another one. So we have Experiment One, Lightning Bolt, Stomping Grounds, Wooded Foothills, Atargus Command, Flint of Four, Gorgolam Iron Pager.
Okay,
is the world is this hand?
I'm not in love with it, but
you're not in love with this hand?
No, no way. So I mean, typically your best draws, right, are something like Experiment One.
Burning Tree. Shut up.
Yeah, Burning Tree.
All of your Burning Tree draws, and then are insane.
a Curd Ape, and then a Wild Nacatl. If you do that, you are probably so far ahead of your opponent. There's not a lot they can do to catch up.
Sometimes I wish this is a video podcast so people could see like my arm like hitting your arm and pushing you away and like guys. Talking about I hit you. Shut up. And talking about how. Like, you would rather have a Burning Tree in this hand? Obviously, you'd rather have a Burning Tree in this hand.
No, I mean...
This hand is a keep.
Keep or a sneep?
Keep. Snap, keep.
Oh, I don't know. It's Flint Hoof 4, and only attacking for 2 seems so weak.
What are you talking about?
This deck just...
What if you drew a Burning Tree Emissary?
Yeah, I mean... Oh, oh my gosh. You know what? No, because... The results
you results get. Oriented thinking.
Exactly.
We just drew the Burning Tree Emissary.
But that's wrong.
But also, like, with your worst case scenario is turn one a 1/1 that turns into a 2/2, and then turn two a 3/3, and then you have a Targus Command, Lightning Bolt, Gorgolam Iron Pager. Like, that's a snap keep.
What? Yeah, but if they have a decent amount of removal, where does that leave you? Almost nowhere. And they almost assuredly yes. Oh yes. So they're definitely either going to have like a Lightning Bolt or a Path.
Okay, so they Lightning Bolt my Experiment One, and then they
have this. No, they're not going to do it to the Experiment One.
Going to lose!
You think so?
How many times have we played this deck where if they don't kill their Experiment One, they lose?
Yeah, that card is crazy. Okay, so they bolt the Experiment One.
And then they have the 3/3 to kill. The 3/3 is very big and modern.
Okay, it is
especially when
large.
You have Gorgolam Rampager. You can't just...
Sure, everybody
your
has
life can't result can't revolve around people having Doom Leaps. They all have them.
No, I mean, with this deck, that's not something that you're worrying about while you're playing.
That's but, my point. That's why this hand is great. Is if you think about it, like... They need to have Lightning Bolt plus Terminate to have a great chance. So I would snap keep this hand.
I definitely think it's a keep. I just don't think it's a snap keep. I don't think it's going to get you there as fast as you do.
Wow.
What?
I would advocate the listeners to always keep hands like that.
It was very good. I would never mulligan that, but it's just not as explosive as I would.
You'd never go mulligan it, but it's not a keep?
Yeah, I would keep it. I would think about it for a moment. I would keep it. I'd keep it every time.
I don't even know that there's a thought. Like, you have 2 lands, a 1-drop, a 2-drop, removal spells, burn spells.
Oh my gosh, look at this.
And Gorgolam
Iron Pager. Oh wait, no, there's not a second land. That's not as good as I thought.
Let's talk about this, because you saw this hand initially. Lightning Bolt, Wild Nacatl, Curd Ape, Burning Tree Emissary.
I think on the
drop. And one land being
a Windswept.
Windswept Heath, which obviously you would grab a Stomping Grounds with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would keep this on the draw.
I would. This is one of those hands that I would keep every time.
Would you? I mean, on the play,
so
it's,
we have,
it's good. No, with the Burning Trees, I think you have to keep it, right? That's, you just have to.
Your payoff is so high.
Yeah, you roll the dice on this one.
On it's drawing too, any land.
It's too good. And we didn't draw any for...
Well, also, we shuffle turn one, so the least matter.
I mean, still, statistically speaking, the chances would be even smaller, but whatever. I think, yeah, the payoff there is so great. It's so large going Burning Tree, you know, 2 monsters. It's beautiful.
And the thing is, it's like, even if you don't hit that Burning Tree, like, you have plays. You have 2 Burning Trees and then 1 drops for the rest of your hand.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good. You're not doing anything.
Nothing but 2 threes and 2 twos in your hand. And
every turn, they're coming down.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like you're not making meaningful plays on the board. It's just harder. Because if you don't draw that land, you're not favored. Let's not pretend. That's one of those hands where I keep that one lander, and I'm a very aggressive mulliganer, and I would keep that hand. I would not keep it, but I would keep that hand.
Yeah, I don't think you could afford to get rid of it.
Next up, we have Burning Tree, Tarma Wave, Experiment One, Dharma Raid, Lightning Bolt, Stompground Mountain. All right. Do you want to snap your fingers on this one?
Yeah. Snap keep.
Well, let's hear it. Well, that was a loud snap.
It was a good one. Yeah. That's how good I feel about this hand.
Yeah, this hand this is fantastic. Yeah, why don't you talk about it?
Okay, so Stompground Mountain, Lightning Bolt, Dharma Raid, Experiment 1, Tarmogoyf, Burning Tree. This is, I mean, other than your yard filling, you turn one. Oh, and yeah. So you turn one, Experiment 1, then just Experiment 1 unfortunately only evolves one time.
It does. It's important
to right, which most
which
likely
in modern do. Is going to happen.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times people will get Taxian Probe, you know, Serum Visions. They're filling up the yard pretty quick. Usually by turn three, your Goyf's a pretty decent size.
Yeah. How big do you think your Goyf gets in this deck specifically, where you have things like Become a Mancer and you're attacking so quickly that for me in testing, it's almost always a 3-4.
Yeah, it's almost always a 3-4. I would say on average more, it's a 4-5.
I have not had that experience.
Really?
Yeah, I usually find my Tarmogoyf in this deck being 3-4s, where in other decks I have it being 4-5s or 5-6s.
Yeah,
I mean,
just, land, creature, instant, sorcery is the money. That's where it is. My opponents are almost always playing sorcery spells. So,
but, all right. So, let's move on to mid-range. We're gonna do a little bit different, because I was going to do just your typical Abzan aggro deck, your aggro, Abzan aggro deck, but I wanted to do something a little different, so we're actually going to do Abzan Raptor, the deck that I literally play on Modo. So the reason that I did this, and Manny and I talked about this, is so all of you probably play Abzan aggro if you're playing an Abzan deck.
All of you.
Yeah, and the thing is like, I don't. I play Abzan midrange, like with Obsidad, Gideon, Sorin, Languish, like play a very different deck than you guys on Modo because it's favored in the Abzan mirror. But I want to talk... What?
Did you say Obsidat?
No, Obnixilis. I meant Obnixilis.
I was all like, you can't play that right now.
I meant Obnixilis. But anyway, if I said Obsidat, I apologize. But I want to talk about, like, specifically this mid-range deck and how hands can be different in this style of deck. So it's going to be, let's look at a hand and talk about how we feel about it. So we have Jungle Hollow, Canopy Vistpath.
It's very slow.
I would snap keep this hand.
Would you? I mean, it seems...
Either way, if we see our opponent play Mountain, like, red guy...
Yeah.
We can just snap off the Den Protector.
It's an option, but it is definitely good.
And if they play a blue card, we can just play tap lands.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if your Siege Rhino, you know, gets countered, that's fine. Because, I mean, you get it right back.
Yeah. I'm a pretty big fan of hands that have this much versatility. I can see people that would have trouble with this hand, though. I can see people that don't know if they want to keep this, if they want, where they want this hand to go.
Right, and I mean, this is a much larger deck than the Abzan that I am used to. So, with it not being so highly aggressive, I mean, it's, you know, it's being a little biased, but I can see where you're coming from.
Here's the reason that I like this hand. Mm-hmm. So, against control, we have so much utility.
Yeah,
in
that's, yeah, Shambling
Den
Vent.
Den Protector, Shambling Vent, Ruinous Path, Siege Rhino.
You got
right?
a lot of...
Replay, even if we're lucky. I guess we couldn't technically do it with this hand. But we also have a Siege Rhino.
No, you
which
could.
Is really good.
Right, so you... Oh, you couldn't play, the Den Protector.
Being able to do that. Against midrange, what do you more do you want than Den Protector, Siege Rhino, Ruinous Path? Like,
yeah,
and that's the thing.
Same nonsense.
Is this hand is, it's not our compilation of spells to lands that we want. In fact, it's not even the lands we want in every matchup. But the thing is that it all comes together to having a decent chance to win every matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's definitely way worse hands that you might consider keeping than this.
Yeah, and for that reason, for me, for its versatility, and the reason that I love mid-range decks, I'll just say sweet draw. The reason that I love mid-range decks is that hands like that happen. And you have, it's very similar even.
Yeah.
But different. Because it's Abzan Control.
Okay.
As you would remember it. And not Abzan Aggro.
Okay.
Canopy Vista, Sandstep Citadel, Jungle Hollow. So, and then we also have Den Protector, Vista, Den Protector, Gideon. So in the dark, I actually would never keep this hand.
Never?
For me until turn three. In fact, it's not even a meaningful play. There's not a meaningful play for me until turn four with this hand.
It's very, very slow. I do think you get crushed. I mean, your one redeeming quality is if you're possibly playing control, It seems pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, so, getting up on lands and having a man land and a planeswalker, those are all very good things for you. It is just incredibly slow. I mean, if your opponent's playing an aggro deck, you
die.
Yeah, your Gideon might not mean anything because it's way too late.
Yeah, I would mulligan this hand. So we've talked about a couple hands. So with mid-range, what is your ideal amount of lands? Suppose, for me, it's the same thing as other decks. I think it's a 3-4 split. It's very close to control, but I'm more willing to keep it to lands. Yeah, I agree completely. What about, is there a matchup where you change that composition? And then I'd rather have specifically untapped lands against aggro, whereas in the mid-range mirror, I'm pretty close to the same. I want to be the control deck against every matchup, unless I'm playing against Skrull, where I want to beat the aggro game.
For me, it's losing easily to aggro. I think, you know, it's very hard to not have, once you have that information, if you know that you can't interact for several turns or, you know, just maybe one turn too late, it's you know, very decisive for me.
What about, like, when you're playing a mid-range deck, how do you feel against the combo decks? I mean, in this format, it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
But, like, let's say you were playing Jund in Modern. Is there a specific composition of spells to lands? Is there interactive spells that you want?
I mean,
like, what are you feeling?
I mean, the biggest combo deck right now. So if you're playing Jund in Modern, the one you have to worry about is Splinter Twin. But that's typically a pretty good matchup. I mean, you have so many more removal spells than they have counters. I mean, it's good. It seems very good. As long as you have 1 to 2 removal spells, you're ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, I think that for me, it's in the against combo, when I'm playing the lands to spells composition, it's all about, like, where I'm at against specific...
Yeah, and I mean, well, another
thing... That's also why I built my decks the way I built them.
Right, and another thing that can shore up a lot of those option.
Yeah, things like Duress, Thassa's,
yeah.
Inquisition... Things like that.
Absolutely. Totally changes.
One last hand with this deck, and then we'll wrap this up. So we have Shambling Vent playing Windswept Heath, and then we have 3 spells, being Ultimate Price, Nissa, and Gideon.
I like it.
I would keep this hand 100 times out of 100 against any deck.
I would keep it. It seems very good.
This is the perfect game one hand.
Yep.
You have early interaction against aggro, Nissa's insane against aggro, Gideon's good against aggro, control, and mid-range. Like, this hand
this
is everything
great.
I've ever wanted in a mid-range deck in my life.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the fact that you can turn your battle lands on so fast is great. I mean, turn 4 Canopy Vista is never better.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
this hand is great because we go turn 1 Shambling Vent, turn 2 Plain, our Forest, playing that Canopy Vista,
playing
that Gideon
attack. Yeah, there's nothing you can't play. Absolutely.
So, all right. Do we learn anything here? Like, what did we learn? Important when you're deciding mulligans. It's insane. People don't realize that player draw is so important.
Oh, absolutely. It's probably the first thing I consider you have in your hand, but how they synergize together. And I know that sounds like kind of silly, but like a turn to Dark Confidant or, you know, what have you.
Yeah, I think spell through land ratio is really important. Knowing how your hand plays out against the metagame. Like, what are you looking for in specific decks? When we were looking at the Green Red Aggro deck, we were looking at different things than we were looking at with this Abzan deck, right? Because the metagames are different.
Yeah, and I mean, the way your strategy makes a world of difference.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to consider, and it's important to note those things going into deciding whether or not to keep that hand. The other thing to think about is how different each archetype can be. Like, mid-range and control, you're going to want something like a 3-4 ratio, right? Whereas aggro and combo, you probably don't want that. You want something closer to 2-6, but that can vary very differently with combo. Like, I mean, we did Sneak Keeper to Chance with Oops All Spells, where...
Yeah, it's a whole different animal, right?
Right, it's very different than you could consider with, like, Legacy Elves, where... Or even Storm. Like, there are so many different things to consider with combo decks that it's very deck-dependent, and you need to know your deck going into a mulligan decision. Because you're the only one that knows the numbers on your deck, and knowing your numbers is going to be very important.
Yeah,
but also, each individual archetype has things that they're looking for. You know, we just talked about spell to land ratios and all these decks, and we learn something. We learned that control. Are you surprised by that? I'm not.
I mean, I actually am a little bit. I'm not a huge combo player. I feel like that's... I'm not a big fan of combo, but I think it's an aspect of the game that I need to learn, and I need to learn it soon.
Sure. Anything else you'd like to say to these guys before we go and wrap this up?
No. I think we hammered everything pretty well.
If you have any questions about this, and if you liked this episode, just, or if you didn't like this episode, if it wasn't interesting to you or helpful to you, leave a comment. You know, constructivecriticism.com. There, you just log into your Facebook, leave a comment, and we're happy to answer any questions you have, or, you know, if just any feedback you have. This is a very different episode than we've done before, so if it didn't work out for you, if it wasn't helpful, let us know. If it was,
let us know if it stunk.
Yeah, or if it was awesome, like, let us know how you feel about it. So, clan, don't forget that you can join the clan by messaging myself at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at...
No, you got it.
What I don't know it. I don't know it. No, okay. Go.
Earthstripe. URTHSTRYPE.
You would also message me on Facebook, and then we can set up a time for me to add you to the clan. I'd be happy to do that too. That's at Spencer Stephen Howland. Don't forget to check out the sponsor of this podcast at Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesLC.com, OasisCG.com, and MTGOasis.com. Don't forget that you can become a patron of this show by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/CCMTG. Anything that you can do.
Free cards, yay.
Yeah, you do get free cards if you win. But we just appreciate everything we get. It means the world to us anytime somebody feels like what we're saying is worth something to you. It really does change our week. Like, it means everything.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much to everybody who's doing it. Thank you so much to everybody in the future. We understand that money is not and something that everybody has a ton of. So
I definitely don't.
Yeah, I don't either. So we appreciate anything that anyone can do. Manny, where can people find you? This was a big deal, apparently. Oh,
so big.
So where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name on Facebook is Manuel, M-A-N-U-E-L, last name Meraz, M-E-R-A-Z. Or you can find me on Twitter under my new handle, Manny, M-A-N-N-Y, _CCMTG.
Was that hard?
I mean, it took me a solid, like, 5 minutes to figure out how to change it. That's been my Twitter handle for years. Years and years.
So, it's Manny _CCMTG.
That's me.
Do you feel different today than you did when you changed that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel more of an adult?
No.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me basically everywhere. If there's a Spencer13H, it's probably me. If it's not me, tell them to stop it. But shout-outs, Manny.
Shout-outs. I would like to give a shout-out to Spencer for always writing the show notes. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to work as little as possible at this job.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Manny for coming on the show every week. Man, this podcast is so different than it was 2 months ago. Do you realize that? No, I mean, this podcast is great. I'm really enjoying it right now. I enjoy the direction it's going, and it means the world to me to have you on it. Shout out to everybody, whether you're, you know, whatever your holiday that you're celebrating this year is, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Festivus.
There was another one I was thinking of. But whatever it is, like, winter sucks, so celebrate in some way, because it's cold outside.
It's so cold.
And if it's your summer, then good for you.
Oh, yeah. I always forget we have listeners in other countries.
That it's their summer right now, and they're like, what are you talking about? It's not cold.
Yeah, I have the worst pig-headed American thinking that I'm ashamed of. Just like, everywhere, and it's cold.
But whatever you're doing, like, I hope you're enjoying yourself, and I hope that you're being safe. And, yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we appreciate it, and shout out to all of you. Hashtag would that be good? So every week on this podcast, we read hashtag would that be good from Twitter. It is our where we will read literally everything you have to say, unless it's dirty and can't be said on the podcast. But they're all important. So we have at CCMTG, Chevrolet needs to get off their assets. I like how he filtered that.
Yeah, podcast, that was good. Thank you.
And make a sports car called the Chase. So that would be the
Chevy Chase.
Sure. Hashtag would be good.
Well, the Chevy Chase. That would be... That's good. Hashtag that's great. That's good.
All right.
You know what? I mean, that's funny. All right.
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know about Chevy Chase?
I don't know about Chevy Chase.
Are you serious?
I just don't even know who that is. I know that people talk about him a lot, but I don't know who it is.
You ever seen, like, National Lampoon's, like...
Nope. All right. None of them.
Whoa. All right, I know what we're doing this weekend.
Sitting in the theater 6 minutes till the movie starts, hashtag...
She was like, so, I mean, you knew that it was going to be amazing. I kept my excitement level down so I wouldn't be disappointed. But even if I had it, I still would have been pleased.
So, leaving the movie theater, I was like, there were some things that bothered me. Sure. And then the farther I get away from the movie, the more I loved it.
I loved it.
Those who kept their expectations down did really well. For example, like, Casey said he kept his expectations down.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really did, because he walked out of there feeling how I felt.
Oh, what?
Crazy. But I think everyone who thought, like, these are going to be the prequels, like, were like, this was, like, in the top three Star Wars movies of all time. However you order them, it doesn't matter. You felt that way. So,
yeah.
Yes, CJ, that would be good. At ManyCCMTG finally trained his Twitter handle to make it easier for CCMTG listeners to find him. Hashtag would be good. Is that why you did it?
Yeah, of course that's why I did it.
Yeah, also because you spell...
There's only so many characters they gave me to fit that in, and then that's how I had to do
it. But that's not how you spell fresh. Fresh, but you can't spell the way you think you want to spell it.
Well, it gave me a little extra swag, okay?
All right, whatever.
Okay. Alexandra Lay, and I'll probably murder this last name, but Gamache?
I put Gamchi.
Okay.
But...
G-A-M-A-C-H-E.
I hope it's Gamchi, because, like, Samwise would appreciate that.
Oh, I mean, maybe. Anyway... this beautiful little girl gave mom a bad case of 70 sickness, though. Can't tap for 6 weeks.
Would that be good? That's terrible.
That's great.
Matt Kling would appreciate that.
I was going to say, Matt Kling, for those who don't know, has a tattoo on his belly that says...
it has the tap symbol.
And then the tap symbol, that.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Kling would appreciate this.
Yeah.
This is over.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say?
No, just thank you so much for listening. We want your
checklist into the show notes that it is Austin Gelt's fault. You can find him on Twitter at... Shut up.
I mean, it's not my fault. You don't know how to use a computer.
You can find him on Twitter at Gelts13. That's GOELTZ13. So if the show notes do not include decklist, just tweet at Austin Gelt's and he will make sure that they happen.
Definitely.
So, thank you everyone for listening. We'll see y'all next week. And, Manny, don't go riding unicorns anymore, dude. It's just too bad for your health.
No, man, never again.
All right.
Double peace.
Bye, everyone. Magic.